very serious topic indeed. Cast your mind back. We actually spoke about this issue on the program, really when I started on air here on mornings. It started all in 2018 and 2019. 7 suspected suicides in the city of Whittlesea that left local authorities really worried. And it turned out to be a cluster of suicides among South Asian women in the area of Whittlesea, all of whom had connections to, or had more than half had contacted police over family violence matters. This caught the attention also of Manjula Dutta O'Connor, who's a clinical psychiatrist and who's worked closely with the community in the prevention of family violence. She chairs the Royal Australasian New Zealand College of Psychiatrists Family Violence Psychiatry Network. And this, apart from other issues that have been brought to her attention, led her to write this book, which is called The Daughters of Durga, Dowries, Gender Violence and Family in Australia. A really important book, and she's here to discuss it with you this morning. Manjula Dutta O'Connor, good to meet you. Good morning.
Good morning, Virginia.
Take us back to when you remember hearing and reading reporting around that cluster of suicides.
It was a very sad news, and something that unfortunately I had been predicting for some time, because between 2012 and 2016 we had a run of family violence related murders and suicides. I want to put it in the context of general Australian and global data set that, you know, in Australia one woman per week is killed. So it's not like it's specifically a South Asian women's problem.
Indeed, yeah.
But that if we want to stop domestic violence, then we need to understand cultural tools that are used by the perpetrators. And South Asian culture is a very particular kind of culture because it's highly complex. It's a 7,000-year-old culture that's been continuously practiced in the same way, and the religion more or less the same way. So there is a 7,000 years history of complexity, and to actually understand that culture is essential to create the proper tools. So that is why in some ways I've written this book, is so people can understand what exactly is are the levers that we can pull at to stop these murders and suicides from happening.
That's a really great way to frame it. You're quite right, because there is the broader issue of family violence in any case. But then as you come down to it, culled community by culled community, there are going to be particular differences and idiosyncrasies and complexities within those cultures that you need to have deep cultural knowledge of. And yours goes back a long way, and I think goes back even to your own history of how you remember being raised by your parents.
Yes. So the reason I did that, to weave my own personal story through this, is to show the transition between what look on the seemingly on the surface happy families and harmonious families, how the they are still patriarchal, and that generally those families are happy, and most families there is no domestic violence, but where there is a tendency to engage in bad behavior, then that power is easy to abuse and easy to turn into a criminal behavior.
Let's start with what we know before we talk about a little of your history and the particularly tricky aspect of dowries, whether they are or are not paid. What do we know about the prevalence of family violence in these South Asian communities? Let's stay with, we can speak generally about Australia, but Victoria in particular as well, if we can.
We don't have segregated data.
Okay.
Between called communities and general community. But we did run a survey across the country about how prevalent dowry abuse is. We wanted to know, get some sense of it, because I know what's in my own practice, which is basically gender-based violence-focused practice.
And is it exclusively South Asian, women, Australian women who come to you?
A majority at the moment, okay. Because I have gradually turned the focus onto migrant women, and most of them are South Asian, particularly because I can speak Hindi and Punjabi and okay. understand Punjabi, so it makes it very easy for the young women. The question was?
How prevalent it is.
So we did a survey and across the country, and South Asian people took part in it, as well as some service providers. We had 182 respondents from, and about 32% had either suffered dairy abuse themselves or knew someone who had. So basically, one in three people know something is happening. From that, can we infer that 30% of families are having domestic violence? No, we can't do that. So we don't know the exact numbers.
And what is dowry violence? How do we define that?
So this is the cultural practice, which is basically related to the fact that women have to locate from their parents' family to their husband's family. It's called patrilineal. So once the woman goes to her husband's family, she is seen to belong to that family. She no longer belongs to her own biological family. And in the olden days, families, parents would give this daughter antemortem inheritance so that she would take some wealth with her, usually in the form of gold and some clothes. That was for her in bad times. But what happened during colonization was that the land parcels were handed out to males because the British were essentially a highly patriarchal culture. So previous to what the British did, those land parcels were not in the name of people. They were all in the name of kings. So basically, nobody owned any land before the British came. And so, but the British came and they divided these parcels because they wanted land tax from these people. And so that increased the value of men. But where it went wrong was, when there was drought, they still had to pay taxes. And this put an enormous amount of pressure on those men, which then became, dowry became a way of supporting these men
right.
to pay off those taxes. So basically,
the dowry became a very valuable thing then that could be used in a different way.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so then bad people abuse the system.
I my understanding, and you'll know better than me, is that dowries are illegal now in India, is that
correct.
Right?
Correct, 1961.
Okay, but dowries are still paid in these marriages here in Australia?
Yes, even in India.
Right, against the law.
Against the law. Mm. In fact, almost there is no wedding where the dowry is not being paid.
In some way or another?
Quite openly.
Right.
For example, and they call them gifts now, they don't call them dowry.
Okay, right.
So, and of course we all want to give gifts, don't we, when young people, couple gets married. But the thing is that these gifts are huge. They are big gifts, like an air conditioner, whole of the house, white goods, cars.
Money?
Cash, gold.
And what forms the dowry abuse? What happens then in these relationships where there is family violence and some kind of financial abuse?
So if I can give you an example, there's, you know, hundreds of girls I've got who've been through this. But there's one particular woman who got married, and her family father gave huge amount of gifts.
Married here in Australia?
So her husband was here as an international student, and she was in Delhi.
Okay.
And this was an arranged marriage.
Right.
And so the father and her father and mother were fairly wealthy people, builders. And they gave a huge amount of dowry, 40,000 in cash, plus gold, plus all the household fittings,
okay.
including microwave, washing machine, a car. And when she came here, her husband wanted her father to put an apartment in his name. That was her father had put that apartment in her name.
Right. To transfer the ownership.
To him. Mm. And this was within months of marriage. And she said no.
And how was she treated by him as a result?
So there was a huge amount of physical, emotional abuse. And then one day he suddenly left the house and then came back with four heavy, burly men to threaten. And she terrified and called the police, and that ended that marriage. And she was on a tourist visa. Get this, she was on a tourist visa.
Wow.
So it basically means that, but she wasn't a tourist visa, but they had applied for partner visa. There was, it saved her because based on that, we were able to get her a permanent residency.
And when these matters are brought to police here in Australia and in Victoria, to you keep using that as the local example here, are police well equipped to deal with it? Do they have the understanding?
They do a little bit more because now we have a law in Victoria that we campaigned for. So we started campaigning in 2012 and we got, fortunately for us, the Royal Commission was announced and they saw exactly what we're trying to say and they accepted our petition that it be included within the Family Violence Protection Act.
And what's the particularity of that law?
So that's Family Violence Protection Act 2008. It's been modified to include diary abuse under the meaning of family violence.
Right.
So you cannot demand or make coercive threats to demand any cash, gifts, anything like that in the context of a marriage.
Manjula Data O'Connor is with you. She's written a book called Daughters of Durga, Dowries, Gender Violence and Family in Australia. We started off this conversation by talking about the complexity of the area. And I think we've, you know, touched on one aspect of that, which is confounding to me. Because India is a country that is, of course, at certain social strata, very highly educated.
Yes.
And where women are and can be educated and are encouraged to go on and to live an independent life, as indeed you were as well.
Yes.
And yet we also see this almost quite ancient patriarchal way of regarding a woman and who she is in the home. So it's a conflict, isn't it?
It's a massive conflict for women of India. And the reason I call this book Daughters of Durga was that Durga is the goddess of power. Mm-hmm. And women imbibe that. And, you know, it needs to be said that within the Indian culture, we have, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of gods and goddesses. But we also, so we did have goddesses, which means that we're going back now 5,000-7,000 years, that there was enough respect for women to create goddesses.
Yeah. And very powerful female goddesses.
And very powerful. Yeah. So Durga is a female powerful goddess that is slayer of demons. And the kings pray to her to win the war. And so women were 5,000-7,000 years ago encouraged to be philosophers. They debated in the king's courts. Mm-hmm. They were respected. That was called the golden Vedic period of India, where Sanskrit was a language that was first discovered and written, all the scriptures written about before, ahead of any other culture. And so we now have a situation where on the one hand we have powerful goddesses and in real world like Indira Gandhi. Mm. And on the other hand, we have women who, when they are married and go into the husband's house, they lose their independence and their power.
Indeed, and as we've both acknowledged, often highly educated and very skilled women who have had jobs that have taken them independently around the world and then suddenly find themselves, you know, in some cases and in your book, literally locked in the home and working as a slave. What's the solution to this? I mean, look, I'm asking the huge question, and Jess Hill has endorsed your book, of course. She's the wonderful author of See What You Made Me Do, and she's, you know, forensically profiled family and sexual violence here in Australia. But what is the particular solution to the cultural nature of this violence? Does something happen in that transition between India and here to make those relationships even more conservative than they may have been over in India?
Yes. So basically the migrant, it's a migration effect. Mm. And that is that the these men who go back to get married in India, they're called NRI grooms. NRI meaning non-resident Indian grooms.
Right.
And the non-resident Indian groom has a very high market value. They can command huge dowries, like in the example I gave you. And so the power imbalance already is unconsciously set in the mind of the bride's family.
Yes, yes.
And they are willing to give these grooms whatever they would like because their grooms are going to take their daughters away. And the daughters are going to live a life of great Western freedom and luxury.
My goodness, it's like you're almost telling some sort of Indian fairy tale here.
Yes, but get this, that majority of the women, their dreams do come true, right? I mean, you know, women...
They get taken to another country, they enjoy a good life and...
And they have
get
great jobs
and, yep.
And they have wonderful... You know, Indian migrants pay the highest amount of tax after the British. They are the most highly educated, skilled group, and yeah. Men as well as women.
Absolutely.
And so basically, majority of the homes, you know, they are happy and the children flourish and they're... Children go on to get perfect scores, but where there is a problem is when the power is being abused. And the migration allows that power, and entire sponsorship process gives the man a lot of power, the sponsor a lot of power.
That's so fascinating and clearly a really important part of the constellation of problems that you need to be able to solve if you're to liberate some women from it just sounds like an appalling situation. It's such an important book, and I'm really pleased to have met you, Manjula. I hope we get to speak on other occasions.
Thank you, Virginia. I would love to, and I do absolutely enjoy your program.
Oh, it's nice of you to say thank you. Manjula Datta O'Connor, her book is called Daughters of Durga, Dowries, Gender Violence and Family in Australia. And as part of this, you know, rich and generally wonderfully multicultural community here in Victoria, I'm also very willing to shine a spotlight on the darker aspects and the aspects that we still have to sort out so that anyone who comes to this state can live the life that they were hoping to. It's 8 minutes to 11. Up next, if you've been told